Okay, welcome back. Hour number three. And it's a real pleasure to talk to Russell Texas Bentley again. Russell has been a colleague. We go back, I guess, 8 years now to the American overthrow of the legitimate government of Ukraine. And Russell, of course, moved over to Ukraine. He lives in Donetsk, married. He fought in the first go-round militarily. He is doing all kinds of things I can only imagine now to try to help. We've just gone through the referendums from the two republics and the other two areas there, all of which voted overwhelmingly to become part of Russia. And that is one story. Russell has much to talk about. The latest on the Nord Stream 1 and 2 damage is that it is very well irreparable. And I can just imagine an American submarine on the way down there, and they took it out. They killed it. And they killed Russia, they think, but they also wiped out their allies and colleagues in Western Europe. They got no chance for any natural gas now. So anyway, it's an incredibly complicated story. We have followed it for a long time, and it's. I'm really looking forward to hearing from Russell this hour. Hello, my friend. Welcome back.
Hey, Jeff. Great to be here with you again, my friend. Always happy to talk to you, my bro.
Thank you. Thank you. We have a hell of a lot going on there. I'm going to just let you take it where you want. I'll jump in from time to time, but maybe we want to talk about referendums first. Maybe we want to talk about Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2. I'll just say that Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 being taken out, obviously, by the American forces somehow, probably by submarine with torpedoes or something.
It's the main subject right now, man. I mean, it's world-changing event. It is, you know.
It's an act of war, isn't it, Russell?
It is absolutely an act of war. I mean, you're talking about one submarine pipelines. They're a kilometer below the surface.
Yes.
Multi-billion dollar value. And the value of it is, you know, eclipsed by the fact that now, I mean, and really it's an act of war by the United States, much, much more so than against Russia, against Europe, because it cuts their last hope of survival.
It cut their throats. They stabbed the Europeans
really
in the
does.
Back. Yeah.
And,
incredible.
I mean, the people of Europe, you know, are going, I mean, they're literally going to die because of this sabotage of this pipeline. This year, before this year is over, people are going to die of cold, of starvation, of not being able to survive the winter because of the lack of gas. I mean, it's, you know, one of my favorite American writers, political writers of the United States, Michael Parente, he once said, and this is like so important for people to understand, he said, economic violence is just physical violence in slow motion.
And
the United States has destroyed the economy. You know, the leading economy of Europe, of course, is Germany, and it's now done. It's now done. And I have a lot of German friends, you know. They have a checkered past, shall we say, but, you know, the most ardent anti-fascists in the world are from Germany. And a lot of those people that are so serious about fighting fascism because they understand what it is so well are from Germany, and they are my friends. And, you know, I really, really, I mean, I served in the U.S. Army. I spent 2 years in Germany back in the 1980s, the early 80s. And I had a lot of fond memories of Germany, you know, the good people there. My grandfather, you know, he fought in Patton's Third Army all the way from Italy into Germany, and he spent a couple of years there after the war, denazifying the country. And he also was very fond of German people. But now, the most, you know, robust, productive economy of all of Europe is done for. It's done for. It's going to be, you know, the Great Depression times 10 in Europe. And it's, I mean, people are going to starve. People are going to freeze because of the lack of natural gas. And this whole thing, people need to understand that, you know, the entire thing was that it started off in 2019. And when the Russians had long-term contracts to supply natural gas to most of the countries, if not all, of the European Union. And in 2000, okay, and so, and the general, the price was $250 per 1,000 cubic meters. So in 2020, when COVID comes along and all the industry starts shutting down, the price of natural gas went from 250, which was the general global price, it went down to about 150, 125, because all the industry was shut down. Demand went so low. So the European Union, led by Poland, which, you know, I don't want to say anything like, you know, I don't know, you know, like...
oh, all those Polish jokes that we used to hear about?
The Polish are not known to be extremely intelligent, you know, geniuses over the course of history. So Poland, they take the Russian Gazprom to the Strasbourg Court of Economic Settlements. And they sue Russia, you know, to get out of these, you know, ironclad, totally legal, you know, signed, sealed, and delivered contracts, and they demand that instead of the agreed-upon price of $250 per 1,000 cubic meters, they demand that Russia sell gas to them at the market price, which, because of the COVID and all the industry, was half of that. And the Strasbourg Court, of course, completely crooked, like the ICC, like the UN, and sides with the Poles and the European Union and tells Russia that they have to sell the gas at the market price.
I didn't know any of this. Thank you. This is very important.
It's a fact, man. And so, and this is why Europe, you know, they screwed themselves to the floor, man. So they demanded, you know, they had a crooked court legally enforce their demands to sell gas at the market price. So in 2020, Russia lost, you know, some, you know, $10 or $20 billion because they were forced to sell their gas at half of the price the contracts were signed for. And then comes 2021, everything opens back up, and the price of gas doesn't go back to 250 per 1,000 cubic meters. It goes to 2,500.
And 2,500?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's what it is like right now in Europe. It's even more than that right now. That's the market price.
And the primary place we should add here, the primary place that Europe can still get natural gas is from the United States. LNG ships, big tankers.
That's
been taken
right
over there.
Not nearly enough. There's a pipeline that goes through Poland and Ukraine, but those can supply like 10 billion cubic meters. The Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 were both capable of supplying 55 billion each.
Yeah. Now this is this is huge, and I don't I viewed it, Russell, as an act of war, period. I don't know how much more that Putin and the Russian people are going to take of this kind of crap without some kind of retribution. against America. America's a direct combatant in this war. There's no doubt about that. It's not even arguable.
There's no doubt about it, and it is an act of war, but yet it doesn't really hurt Russia. You know, Russia now in the BRICS, they have China, they have India.
Yeah.
I mean, India and China can, you know, purchase all the gas that Russia wants to sell. No problem. I mean, Russia is in, and Russia is giving these guys, it's not selling it to China and India at the market price. You know, it's selling it pretty close to the 250. It's selling it at a huge discount. You know, it was willing to give Europe
a hell of a break. Huge break. And Europe had it made. And now here's the Americans come along and literally eviscerate their supposed allies in Europe. Just destroy them with this. This is an attack
destroy
on Europe,
them.
Too.
Economic yeah. violence.
Yeah.
And you know what's been happening already is Russia's selling gas, you know, at a very discounted price to China.
Uh-huh.
And China's putting it on the ships just like the United States wants to do. And it's sending it all the way around the world, around the Horn, around Cape Horn, to Europe. So Russia's buying their gas, or China's buying gas from Russia, and then sending it all the way around the world to Europe to sell to Europe because they can sell it for 10 times as much.
Got it.
You know, so it's you know, it doesn't hurt Russia at all.
Got it.
It destroys destroys Europe.
So what comes next, Russell? What comes next?
Well, I mean it's I can tell you that it's gonna be famine and freezing in Europe this year. And by famine I mean that people are going to stop living because they don't have enough food in Europe this year. And you know, here's another thing too, you know, I mean you talk I mean the UN is already saying there's going to be a global food crisis, which is, you know, the nice name for famine.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to be this year. And you know, the Russia has already offered 300,000 tons of free fertilizer to the poor countries in the global south to help them deal with this so-called food crisis. Yep. And the sanctions by the U.S. and Europe are preventing this fertilizer that they're giving away for free. It's not of any benefit to Russia except, you know, politically and morally.
Well,
they can't
like
get
morally.
It out because of the sanctions against Russian shipping and like that, you know. And I'll tell you something else. That's where this famine came from, Jeff. It's because in Europe, it's the same. Because in 2020, when the price went back up, you know, production of agricultural fertilizer is an extremely energy-intensive industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the fertilizer companies in Europe simply could not afford to produce fertilizer at the cost, at the falsely inflated cost,
mm-hmm.
you know, for natural gas. So they just didn't produce it. And so the harvests, that I mean, like right now, it's September, dude. It's the time when everybody's, you know, bringing in the harvest and stuff. And when you produce, you know, 100% with fertilizer, and then you stop using fertilizer, you're going to get, you know, 25%, if you're lucky. If you're lucky.
Yeah.
And, you know, German government economists are predicting that a loaf of bread in Europe can cost 10 euros by the end of this year. In which case, if you don't have 10 euros for a loaf of bread, that should cost about one half of 1 euro, you're just not going to get any bread. And if you don't have bread to eat, you can go eat grass or dirt or stars.
Or bugs. Don't forget the bugs.
Yeah.
Eat
the
those
bugs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I mean, it's just, and it gets to a point where the people of Europe and the people of the United States, because, you know, what's happening in Europe is happening in the United States a little less intensely and a little bit more slowly, but it's happening in the United States. And they have to understand at some point they have to just come to the conclusion that the people who own and control their governments, you know, that are causing this suffering, this death, this destruction, it's not, they're not doing it because they're stupid. They're doing it on purpose.
I know.
They're doing it on purpose.
Now there's a,
and
there's
that's
another,
what it is.
There's another pipeline that isn't getting much talk about over here, and it does. You, I think you were alluding to it earlier. It goes through Ukraine to Crimea, allegedly, and that there's a rumor that that was taken out today. There's another one, a longer one, too. But I don't know. This thing isn't over. It's not going to just
stop. It's just
stop.
Beginning. I mean, it's the people of the world, and especially the West, need to understand that this is literally, and in, you know, in the spiritual sense, this is Armageddon right now. This is, you know, the battle of genuine satanic evil against the future of humanity.
Yes, it is.
And not all of us are going to make it.
No, you're 100% correct. NATO, NATO, what the hell is NATO? Don't answer that. NATO member, one of the NATO countries, actually it's an aggregate response, NATO wants a devastating retaliation against Russia. The bloc's response to use any of the weapons of mass destruction in Ukraine must not be unclear, but still massive. This comes from Poland, of course. Why are the Poles so screwed up? They've always been screwed up. I don't get them at all. It's just something, it's like they got a screw.
Well, you know, I mean, it's
them.
Like, you understand that, you know, I mean, stereotypes are based in fact, you know. Germans like beer and sausage, Chinese like noodles, and Polish are not geniuses. And I'm not against Polish. That's but
it's
what
true.
They've done is they've screwed themselves to the floor. They've led Europe destroy itself.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if the Poles invaded Western Ukraine. They've been talking about that. They said, that's Polish territory, and we're going to take it back. That wouldn't surprise me. They're nuts.
And they're, I mean, and actually, that's going to happen, man. I mean, Russia doesn't want Western Ukraine. And now maybe we can start talking about, like, the referendum and the war and stuff here. And it's...
Go to it.
It needs to be said that, first of all... you know, we just had 4 days of voting in the Donetsk People's Republic, Lugansk People's Republic, and the liberated areas of Kherson and Zaporozhye, which is down in the south.
Yeah.
And all that voting, I mean, and it was done on paper, not with some bogus, you know, fake computer.
No electronic, no digital voting machines.
It was done on paper. Every vote was put into a clear, you know, bulletproof glass box. I voted yesterday, the last day of voting, because, and I can tell you, I mean, these lies, these, you know, I mean, and they're not even idiots. They're just absolute liars. You know, I've seen somebody, I think it was like the foreign minister of Germany or something, saying that, you know, the Russian soldiers come up with put guns to people's head to make them vote. You know, it was
some
ridiculous lie.
Come on. I didn't see that one. I believe you. But it's disgusting, this stuff.
It is disgusting because it's so much of a lie, you know. I mean, and I'll tell you what did happen is that for the first 3 days of the voting, about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning each day, we'd get a knock on our apartment door. And it was volunteers because... For the first 3 days, they didn't really have a lot of you know, public voting where people could go to a certain place because, mm-hmm. you know, of the danger of artillery, of Ukrainian artillery bombing
yes,
the voting
yes.
stations.
Yes.
So volunteers went around to different, you know, parts of the city, different, you know, to apartments and directly and didn't force anybody. They invited them. They said, you know, they knocked on our door and we said hello. And they said, hey, if you want to, you can come downstairs. We got a thing outside. You can vote. We said, no, we're going to do it later on the last day. And they said, okay. You know, there was no, I mean, there's absolutely no force. There was international observers. It was all done on paper, very simple, yes or no question.
Right.
You know, the ballots were put into sealed boxes. And then at the end of the election, they were opened up, you know, and everywhere it was, you know, over 90%. And so there's no question that the people here don't want to be part of Ukraine anymore. They don't. I mean, there are people here that are proud to be Ukrainian. My wife's father is, you know, a coal miner, and you know he's very he's like the Ukrainian Archie Bunker, you know. And he's, I mean, he's very conservative, you know, rock solid guy, and
yeah.
you know, for a long time he has been against joining Russia. He's like, well, you know, I'm a Ukrainian stuff. But he's come to understand that, you know, that now what Ukraine is today is a puppet state controlled by the West, particularly the United States, and they've put genuine Nazis into power. And I don't mean far right. I don't mean nationalists. I don't mean neo-Nazis. I'm talking about Nazis that say Heil Hitler, that say Slava Bandera, which is the same exact thing as saying Heil Hitler, you know, that murder and torture prisoners and civilians, you know, that have swastika tattoos, swastika flags, photographs of Hitler in their barracks. You know, these are genuine Nazis, and, you know, no decent person will submit to living under Nazis. I mean, no intelligent person either, because you know, Nazis are, you know, they're literally cannibals. You know, it's like ISIS, which is also a creation of the U.S. deep state, which also yes. is working in Ukraine with the Ukrainian army to kill the people right. that have stood up against Ukraine, you know, the coup d'etat, the Nazis in Ukraine. And so, you know, the people here voted overwhelmingly to against Nazism. It wasn't, I mean, and as I was kind of making a joke about it, you know, I said, well, you know, I voted yesterday to allow Russia to join the Donetsk People's Republic, you know, because I'm very proud of the DPR. I'm also a citizen of Russia, and I'm very proud of that, too. But, you know, I mean, the DPR, the Donetsk People's Republic, mm-hmm. it has the most patriotic Russians in all of Russia. And
really?
It has, you know, since before the first World War.
I'm not surprised. That's not, yeah, go ahead. It's fascinating.
And, yeah. I mean, and it also has the best soldiers. You know, I mean, this special military operation has been going on for almost 8 months now. You know what? And the Russians have made some mistakes. They have made some serious mistakes, and I can tell you that, you know, one thing, the fact that for 8 years, the people of the DPR and the Luhansk People's Republic, you know, we stood on the front lines, which are basically the city limits of our cities. I mean, where I sit in the center of Donetsk right this second, you know, it's less than 10 miles to Ukrainian army positions. You know, so we've stood.
Russ, I remember when you were on years ago. And you were up in the front then, and we followed that whole thing thanks to you. Yes,
yep.
We're aware of it. It's
yep.
right there.
I mean, it's people, you know, in other places can hardly imagine what it's like. I mean, but for 8 years, the DPR and the LPR forces have stood our ground. I was in Vostok Battalion, and the motto of Vostok, Tolka Piriot ni adin shag nazad. That means only forward, not one step back. And Vostok has never, ever retreated you know, or surrendered any position that they ever held. And, you know, the Russians should have learned more from us. I mean, because they did. When they retreated from Kiev, Bucha, mm-hmm. when they retreated from Kharkov, around Kharkov, it was a huge screw up. You know, let's call it what it was. It was a terrible, terrible screw up. They didn't have the forces that they need. They underestimated their enemy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were surprised because, you know, the enemy is very, very dangerous, very evil, and they were surprised and they had to retreat. And the places they retreated from, like in Bucha, then, you know, so the Ukrainian army comes back in, and then come these Einsatzgruppen, these special police squads. They basically murdered, I mean, they murdered people just for having, you know, Russian humanitarian aid, Russian food packages, to kill them all, you know, and so... There's people that are now nervous, even here in the DPR, about whether they can trust Russia to come in and take the land and protect the people and not, you know, later run away. So, I mean, it's a hard situation.
This is
a real war.
Yeah, that's a shock.
And, you know, the people are, you know, but, you know, the overwhelming majority of us, we believe in Russia. I mean, and we believe in ourselves too, you know. So there's, you know, for us here in the DPR and the LPR, you know, there's never been any thought of surrender, because only behind us is only our homes and our families.
Yeah.
And we're going to die fighting before we let Nazis come in and do what Nazis do. I mean, and, you know, the Nazi atrocities that have been publicized since, I mean, you know, and it's been going on for the whole 8 years, you know, and people need to understand this war didn't start in March or February of 2020. It started in the middle of 2014, and it's been going on. And these Nazis, this is what I'm talking about, a Nazi, you know, I mean, from Azov Battalion since 2014, you know, they themselves have published videos of them crucifying a DPR prisoner, nailing him to a cross, and standing it up, and then setting it on fire, setting him on fire, burning him to death. They have made the video of them burying, you know, a semi-conscious but alive prisoner, throwing him in the grave and burying him alive. They have published the video of a DPR militia man and his pregnant wife being hung, you know, and it isn't fake. It isn't, you know, some, you know, propaganda or something. These are real videos. These psychopaths, you know, it isn't, I mean, it's like with any mass murderer, you know, any psychopath, it isn't fun unless you can show people what you've done. And so, and that's what they
get
do.
That.
I mean, the murders and the tortures that they've committed. I mean, in March, they had like 20 Russian prisoners up near Kiev, and they just unloaded them off the van, and then they shot them in the knees or in the groin, and then just left them there to bleed out. You know, I mean. You know,
let me ask you this. What did the people of Donbass, LPR, DPR, et cetera, and those around Kharkov, I call it Kharkov, who have now been turned over to these butchers, by the way, and a lot of them have been executed, I understand. But what do the general people in the Donbass think of the U.S. at this point? I mean, they lost 15,000 people during those 8 years after the U.S. overthrew the government. So
what
do they feel about America at this point, which sends HIMARS, and now there's talk about hundreds of tanks? Zelensky's just constantly got his hand out and whining and crying and begging. And and the agenda is to give these killers weapons, and they're doing it.
What can we think?
Yeah.
We hate the American government, just as the Soviet Union hated the German Nazis. Just like that. It's exactly the same. I mean, you understand that in Donetsk, last few months, every single day, the city center, civilian areas of the city center, get bombed by HIMARS, by 155 NATO heavy artillery. And, I mean, the other day, it was the 19th of September, and it was one of the, it was probably the worst day of my life. We had to go. A shelling occurred in a like a roundabout, a micro district called Baku Commissariat, and it was named after like 30 Soviet martyrs that got killed 102 years ago in 1920, and on the anniversary of that, they choose it, you know, I mean, this is like Masonic, satanic type stuff. They choose, and so they bombed the area that was named after these martyrs, you know, on the anniversary of their deaths, and they killed 16 people. I mean, there was, it hit right next to like an outdoor, not hot dog stand, but more like, you know, cafe type deal, you know. They made you know, roasted chickens and shawarmas, which is like a big Russian burrito or something, and there was a bunch of people that were standing in line to get, you know, buy food from this place. It was owned by a Moroccan guy, owned and operated, and the shell landed right next to him, and I had to go with some other journalists to document this event.
Well, and it was, I ran the video. You sent it.
Yeah, it was horrific, man. I mean, you know, there was, it was like a butcher shop, you know, of, except made of people. And, I mean, and, you know, and the worst thing was, is that my darling, beloved wife, she's the one who makes subtitles for my videos. So, you know, I had to bring the video home, and she had to see it to make the subtitles. And I mean, it hurt her to see what happened. Like, as in, you know, she's sick now from it, you know. And
understood.
I mean, it's beyond imagination. And this has been going on, particularly this last year. They're not shooting at our guys on the front line. They're not shooting at necessarily, you know, ammo dumps or fuel concentrations, or
this is terrorism.
You know,
they're terrorizing and killing, murdering civilians. This is the ultimate cowardice.
Killing and murdering
the ultimate
civilians.
Cowardice.
Exactly, Jeff.
The ultimate cowardice.
But,
they
don't understand that it's the ultimate failure, because the people here, you know, are the most, you know, dedicated and brave and principled that I've ever known anywhere in the world, you know, and I've been around. But I mean, the harder you hit the people here, the harder they're going to hit back. You know, there's no possibility of surrender. There's no retreat. There's no begging for mercy. You know, we'll die fighting. We're not going to live on our knees. We're never, ever, ever going to surrender. And then these people, you know, and everything that's happened in Ukraine since 2014 is absolutely only done on the orders of the United States and the West, you know. I mean, particularly, especially the United States. Biden has been the point man since 2014 here. And, I mean, I don't understand how Americans don't just drop down dead from dying of shame to have a piece of excrement like that, a senile, degenerate, pervert, scumbag, as the representative of their country to the world. It's, I mean, it's beyond my understanding how there hasn't been already a revolution there. You know, I mean, and the only thing that I can understand about it is that, you know, as bad, as completely a piece of garbage as Joe Biden is, you know, Kamala Harris is even worse, and Nancy Pelosi, who's third in line as Speaker of the House, is even worse still, you know. So, I mean, it's just, you know,
we've lost our country.
Come around,
Russ. We've lost. Americans have lost our country. We've lost our country. I was asking that just the other day. This man, this Biden, this degenerate pedo pervert, horrible career criminal, is unelected, illegitimate, and the American people have accepted it.
Yeah.
And I don't understand it. It's as if all of Americans have been subjected to something by way of an electromagnetic field or something that took away their logic and reason, turned them into wimps. I don't know what the hell's going on. This is not the America that you and I grew up in at all. It's not.
I mean, I remember when, you know, there was still reasons to be proud to be an American, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I remember when they taught you how to read in school, you know. I remember, you know, the days of, you know, JFK. I mean, even, you know, like Richard Nixon, you know. I mean, even he would be a pillar of principle and, you know, dignity compared to what we have now, you know. And it's like,
you're 100% right.
I'm glad, and I got to say this, you know, I mean, I still consider myself a patriotic American. I love the good things about America, but I hate the government. I hate the government. I consider it as bad.
It's not our government, Russ. It's not our government. We were overthrown here just like Kiev was overthrown by the Americans and Vicky Nuland and the others. We've been overthrown.
Yep.
We don't have a representative government here. We have a junta. We have a regime.
It does not. In fact, it is the enemy of the common people.
That's true.
You know, don't you understand? I mean, the people of the United States need to understand when Biden says what it's going to be, what, 85,000 more new IRS agents? And all those dudes are going to do is go around and try and find money to rob from the working people that are already, you know, up to their ears in debt, that are already working as hard as they can. And these IRS agents, I mean, and I've been saying this for years, and the only solution, I mean, voting in the United States is a game for idiots. It's for idiots. It is political masturbation. You know, it might feel good for a little while, but it's a waste of effort and resources.
Yeah, I agree.
And in the end, it doesn't do anything but leave a mess that somebody's going to have to clean up.
Yeah, I agree.
So it needs to stop. Voting is for idiots. Only an idiot would vote. I mean, you know, even, you know, the alternative parties, the Libertarian Party or the Green Party, they're totally co-opted. You know, I mean, there's absolutely zero chance, you know. Only an idiot votes in the United States, and I mean that, you know, across the board. You know, what the only way to change and save the United States isn't going to happen from voting. It's going to happen, if it happens, and I pray to God that it will, it's going to happen the same way that it happened in the DPR and the LPR, which is people are going to stand up to their Nazi masters. And they're going to say, no, we're not going to do it. And I mean, and then Don Bass, you, I know you remember in 2014, when the Ukrainians, under the orders of Biden, sent the Ukrainian army into Donbass, and the civilians, the citizens stood there in front of these BMPs and tanks, you know, and put their hands on the front of the tanks and said, don't, you know, we're your people too. Don't come attack us. And they were run over. They were shot down. And so the people of Donbass stood up. They defended themselves. They started out, I mean, with, you know, baseball bats and shotguns. And, you know, eventually...
You had to build a fighting force. You were there. You had to build an army to defend your people, your families, your loved ones. And it's the truth.
That's what the people of Europe are going to have to do now. That's what the people of the United States are going to have to do now. They're going to have to overthrow their Nazi masters. And that's not exaggeration. It's not rhetoric or hyperbole. That's what it is, and that's their only hope. Because if they don't, because really what's happening, Jeff, is this whole thing about the depopulation plan of Klaus Schwab and the WEF, it's real. It's real, and it's happening right now.
Yes, it is. That's
and,
right.
You know, this is Armageddon. I mean, and, you know, it says in the Bible, in Revelations, it says the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which is pestilence, which is, you know, the created disease and the vaccine.
Yeah.
It's famine, which is coming right now, and it's war. And the fourth horseman is death on the pale horse, and hell follows after. That's what it says in the Bible, bro. And you know what? It's unfolding before our eyes right now, right now. And Russia
exactly.
is not the bad guy. Russia is the one that's trying to protect the future of humanity from the
Nazis. All Americans who are still capable of linear thought and honest cogitation of the facts that they're being they hardly get any good information at all. They think they look at this flat screen. It's full of CNBC and MSNBC. They think they're getting some kind of an education. They're getting nothing. They're getting mind-controlled, programmed, and brainwashed. So they have a real difficult time getting the truth. That's hard for Americans. I'm not giving them a free ride here because there's a responsibility. And the truth is out there. It is available on the Internet if you want to look for it. But you can't stare at this shit and think you're getting to be anywhere more intelligent. You're not. You're getting dumbed down. That's what's happened here. It's worse than you'd think. It's worse than you'd think, Russ. It's that bad.
I can see it from here, Jeff. I mean, It's literally what people in the West are being told is the opposite of the truth. That's the only
use. It's the opposite of reality. Exactly.
Mainstream media from the West. I mean, bro, I can tell you that I wrote an article a while back, I think probably I sent it to you, where the Ukrops bombed Donetsk on multiple occasions, and in Western media, the next day on the front page of newspapers is a photo of these bombed buildings of these dead people in the street, and it says, Russia is bombing Ukraine.
I know. They turn it all around.
So,
it's the most shameless.
It's not a mistake. It's not like, you know, some stupid picture. It is intentionally done. They know they're lying. I mean, when you put a photograph of a bombed apartment building from Donetsk and then you say Russia continues to bomb Ukraine, I mean, it's not a mistake. It's not like, where'd we get this picture from? They stole the picture. These pictures, plural, from photographers who are here in Donetsk, they steal the picture. They don't give, credit to who took the picture. They don't pay them either. They steal their picture, and they put it up, and they put up a lying headline above it. I mean, and so this is intentional. It's absolutely nothing about a mistake or anything. And, I mean, and so people are getting lied to. But it's time that they understand it. You know, I mean, and you know, the problem is, you know, it's a problem of lack of courage. You know, because if people, I mean, there's a lot of people that just simply don't want to know the truth. Because if you know the truth, if you know that the U.S. government is, you know, the worst enemy of the future of humanity in the world today, the Fourth Reich, the 21st century Nazis, if you know that, then you know that you have a moral responsibility to do something about it. But if you just pretend, we'll go watch the football game and drink some beer and eat some hot dogs, you know, then, you know, you can just pretend that everything's going to be okay and everything's going to go on. So people are afraid to know the truth. They're cowards, you know, and fear is like the thing that turns people into garbage, you know. I mean, it is when you're a coward, you're useless. You're less than useless. You can't be trusted, you know, you can't be respected. So, I mean, that's the problem. There are a lot of cowards in the United States, and You know, the saying about the, you know, the coward dies a thousand deaths and the brave die only one. But, you know, these people, you know, a lot of them choose to be stupid. And they're going to get what they deserve. And what they deserve is not...
We see it all the time. These people who are taking these shots that are nothing less than a bioweapon genocide, they're taking them voluntarily. Some are on their fifth and sixth shots now. So they're going to get what they chose. Now, I know they've been mind-tricked and duped, but it's you still make the choice, and the information is out there now. These are very dangerous, deadly shots. They're nothing to do with vaccine, as you know. Nothing.
An excellent example, Jeff.
Yeah. We got 5 minutes. Now, Russ is going to be back with us in 2 days, Friday night. So don't miss that. We're going to bring much more information to you. I'm a little bit concerned about, and I don't want to get anybody in trouble. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. But they just put a new general in charge, Putin did, of the operation in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And now it's in the east and the south, pretty much. I don't know what kind of a difference it's going to make, but if you had to grade the Russian military in terms of tactics and effort so far, what would you grade them? And I'm asking you to speak on behalf of LPR, DPR, and all people who want freedom. I get the impression that they're not real happy with some of the events that have gone on. Tell me more.
We're not impressed. There's a lot of things that could have been done a lot better and should have been done a lot better. Now, obviously, with the mobilization of Russian reserves and with the replacement of some of the top brass, everybody is expecting that things are going to go a lot different. I mean, all that needs to happen is Russia needs to come in. They need to neutralize the tens of thousands of Ukrainian army that's still on the Donbass front. Even, I mean, 8 months later, we're still getting bombed
still
in Donetsk.
Still there.
You know,
shouldn't
10
happen.
Miles away. And that's not satisfactory results on any kind of scale, you know. So that needs to be done first. They need to neutralize the Donbass front. Come around, make a circle, surround them, come in from the back, and then, you know, either capture them or kill them as they choose. And then from there, all they have to do really is they can take Odessa, you know, in the south from Kherson, and then, you know, come down from the Russian border. I mean, it's 100 kilometers from the Russian border to Kiev. They don't have to go all the way from the east. But, you know, you take Odessa, which cuts off their, you know, Ukrainian access to the sea. You take Kiev, and then it's a done deal. And then Russia needs to control everything east of Kiev, you know, a line
Kharkov.
From...
Got to have Kharkov, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but that's east of Kiev, you know, so that's definitely going to come. I mean, and then, you know, whatever the Polish can, Hungarians, whoever wants, whatever's west... can have it. There's nothing but Nazis there anyway. And, you know, that's what needs to happen. So, I mean, we appreciate that the Russians came in. They saved us from absolute genocide. The Ukrainians were 1 week away from making a giant military offensive against Donbass and basically killing everybody here. So we appreciate that Russia came in. And they did come in, and a lot of good, brave men have given their lives and given their blood to protect Donbass. But the people here in Donbass for 8 years have also been protecting Russia. And like I say, you know, who defends Donbass defends Russia. Who defends Russia defends the future of humanity. And that's where we're at right now. And everybody in this world, you know, it's the battle of evil against good. And everybody in this world... gets to choose a side. And even if you know, sitting there eating your hot dog and watching the football game is also a way of choosing your side. So everybody has their choice now. It's good against evil. You're on one side or the other. So let's get to work.
Okay, I've got I can squeeze out 60 seconds. I need to ask you one more question, and then we'll follow up Friday. Everyone here is who cares, who's intelligent, is obviously concerned about a nuclear exchange. If you can succinctly wrap up the chances of that now, I don't think the Russians are going to do anything till the midterms here, until they get their 300,000 pulled up, fully equipped and ready to deploy. What are the chances of nukes as you see it right now?
Russia can win in Ukraine without nuclear weapons. Russia can beat Ukraine conventionally. Russia can beat Ukraine plus NATO conventionally in Ukraine and in Europe. It's gonna, if nuclear weapons are used, it's going to be the NATO countries that use them first. And then, and once they use them, you know, then it's, you know, then it's kiss it all goodbye, because the Russian weapons in the nuclear sphere are beyond anything that NATO can match or defend against.
Understood. All right. Very good. Thanks, Russ, for getting up. And we'll talk to you in 2 days. And let's see where we go.
I'll be there on Friday too, bro.
Okay.
It's always good to talk to you, Jeff. Thank you so much, man.
Oh, yeah. You got a great audience of admirers out here, a lot of people listening. So we'll talk soon. You be safe.
All right. You too. Okay. Good luck,
thanks,
bro.
Okay. Russell, Texas Bentley. And there's an inside look from Donetsk. So that's for your information. We will be back tomorrow night. Talk to you then. Take care.